I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And this
is the Eshcast.
This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 461. If I whisper it, it's not as racist.
Ooh, she said white people. Home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming, tech gadget, and anime podcast. I am Ninja Sister.
And I am Pandalicious.
Welcome to a brand new episode of our weekly podcast, Panda.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I am doing fucking phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, I know you're doing fucking phenomenal.
OMG.
Life. You're having a great week.
I'm having, well, technically, this is the start of the week, so I'm on, like, I became, like, on cloud nine on, like, Friday, and now I'm, like, 8 3/4. Like, I ain't coming down anytime soon.
Let's just admit it. You're having the best week ever.
I'm having the best week ever.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah.
That's
I'm pretty stoked about it. It's kind of nice sometimes.
Hey, my dog is stoked for you.
I just think it's great when you get to a point in your life where you have that moment where you are like, I'm an adult, and then I'm
You've been an adult for a while.
Well, no. Like, there are some people like, hey, I'm old enough to be an adult, and I do adult things sometimes, or I engage in adult things.
I have adult-like tendencies, but I'm not actually an adult.
Right, because by the time you do the action of adulting, then you've gone and you've done something to counteract the adulting. And I've now hit this point in my life where, as much as I want to, like, I'd want to just be a kid, you know, forever, it's not...
You're not a Toys R Us kid.
I still like my toys, but I'm not...
There's only 4 toys at Toys R Us that you can play with.
But I'm just saying, like, I've hit that point in my life where I'm like, man, I'm a big kid now.
No. Like, no, you're
I'm
not.
A big
but
kid
But you're
now.
Trying. But you're trying. And I salute your effort.
I'm a big kid now. I am a big kid now. I'm a big kid now.
Hey, you know what? Let's talk about video
Being
games.
Being a big kid, because I am.
And, like, anime and cool things, you know? Because, hey, here's the thing. That's what this podcast is about.
Right.
So we should talk about those things.
Fiscal responsibility.
That is not what this podcast is about.
And Tom Skerritt.
Because you should talk about neither thing. And I should talk about neither thing. Because I don't know Tom Skerritt that well.
In the name of Kelly and her hit song, Shoes, I'm going to get what I want.
I can't even follow that. So
you've heard Shoes.
Yeah, I have.
Oh my god, Shoes.
We did that nonstop for like a month.
I know. And today it came on while I was driving. I'm like, let's get some shoes.
Oh my god.
I didn't, but
these shoes rule.
These shoes suck. These shoes suck. You know that she has like a whole the skit, the character has a whole album.
Yes.
And she has one song that's like, let me borrow that top.
Yes.
Like, let me borrow that top.
Yes. Yes, I'm very aware of the things that the internet giveth.
And then taketh away.
Sometimes.
But that's neither here or there. But
no, I've got a couple things I want to talk about. And one of them, actually, it just popped into my head. And I thought, you know, this would be a good thing to talk about, actually, because I don't think that I've talked about this stuff in a while. So one of the things that I love to binge watch on YouTube is
porn? Yes.
No, because it's really hard to find, like, decent porn on YouTube.
You can watch HBO Go and watch all the late night.
It's not even all the late night. It's like select things from the late night. They don't even have all of Real Sex, which is really upsetting to me.
Like, it's like Real Sex 2.0.
And I'm like, no. Internet. And I'm like, no, no. Go back to like the classic stuff.
Give me some Emmanuel 4, you 6, know, well, and 12.
No, just give me all of Taxi Cab Confessions. Like, hell you can keep Real Sex and Emmanuel. Like, just give me all of Taxi Cab.
What? You know what they should do? They should talk to that lady.
We're totally off topic here.
Who did the Twitter, like, story and just reenact her Twitter story on HBO Go late night.
Yes, that would be amazing.
I would watch it.
That would be an awesome series. I would watch that. I mean, you would just have to call that the Ratchet Confessions, but I would watch that. I would watch that. But no, what I was saying is one of the things that I do binge watch on YouTube is the React channel. It's one of my favorite channels. Fine Brothers Entertainment does it. And so their main series is reaction stuff. And so they have a series that they do with young kids, which is kids react to.
Teens react to.
Adults react. And then elderly react. So now they've added another layer into the React series where they have adults. So parents of some of the kids that are in the kids series, or even some of the kids that are in the teen series. And some of the teens that have aged out of the teen series are now in the adults react. The ones that are in their second and like third year of college.
Oh, that's so fucking cool.
And so it's really interesting to have all these different generational reactions to pop culture stuff.
But I know they also do the YouTubers react.
They do YouTubers react to as well, which is also very interesting, where you have, you know, your PewDiePies and your Amazing Phils and whatnot react to the same videos that some of the other groups are reacting to. But one of the things that they do is they have a dedicated gaming category that they have both elders, adults, and kids play various games and have them react to it. Some of those things are things that are on like SNES games or NES games. They had them play the original Contra.
Wow. Which,
yeah, that was something else. They just did one where elders reacted to and played God of War 3 and really liked God of War 3, by the way.
Hold Devils, Poverty, Mulan.
Yeah. I need more Kratos in my life. But one of the series that I had been watching on there was they actually had teens play Last of Us. Ooh. And usually when they do a game, it's like a one and done. They don't have them complete the story. They actually had the teens play the game all the way through.
Holy shit.
So it took them 20 episodes to get done. And it was
how many of them cried with the giraffe? How many of them cried with the long necks? I'm just
okay.
I'm curious.
All right, not cried,
but like had feels. Had all the feels.
Almost all of them were having the feels when the giraffe thing hit.
Oh.
And so what was very interesting to me, it was watching other people's journey through the game, because we've talked about Last of Us before, and
ad nauseum.
Yeah, and we will continue to talk about it, because I do think that as far as like the upper echelon of games in history, Last of Us is up there, not just because of the visuals, but it really did tell a great story. You got, unless you are emotionally detached, you cannot play through Last of Us and not have feels. And so it was very interesting to watch these very, very strong, you know, kind of macho hipster guys as well as hipster girls and people who are not gamers to begin with experience a story. Like, what was interesting to me was they had elders play the beginning part of the game. So all the way to the credits. So they had to go through Joel losing Sarah.
Woof.
And they all had a knee-jerk emotional reaction, you know, because they were all parents for the most part.
Right.
You know, so they all had kind of that resonating feel.
Right.
You know, and then to watch adults play it and have the same reaction, but that it was, you know, like they felt they were watching a movie and not playing a game, and then have the teens go all the way through it. So you got all these perspectives on the beginning of the game, and then you just had the teens' perspective as they played through it. It was very interesting to me to watch, like I said, their experience with each episode, because they basically the Fine Brothers had them do the part of the game, which you and I have both talked about the retribution being needed. David is a bastard.
Yes.
And deserved to die.
And deserved to be murdered. So, even contemplating the evil thought, you know he was thinking.
You know he was
thinking.
Even though
he never directly said it, but you know.
If you hadn't played the game, Ellie, which is one of the lead characters in the game, is kidnapped by basically
a pedophile.
Yeah. And leader of a cannibalistic group.
So either let me do you or I'm going to eat you.
So David is definitely attracted to Ellie because she is strong, but she's also a woman. And I have a feeling that David hasn't seen a woman
in a long time.
In a long time.
I hear all the butt hurt.
Yeah. And so David basically kidnaps and positions Ellie. And she somewhat plays into it and breaks his fucking finger, at which point David decides, okay, well then fine, I'm not going to be able to keep these guys off you, so you're about to reap all kinds of hurt that you didn't expect, and then we're going to eat you. So basically implying that she's going to get gang raped until
she dies, and then they're going to cut her up and fry her up with some bacon.
Which, you know, Ellie is not really cool with. So she attempts to flee.
I don't know any person who'd be like, you know what? Yes.
Most people are not cool with that. Right.
Sign me up for gang rape and
then death.
Cannibalism.
Yeah. I'll choose that. No. So she plots her escape. Is working on it just when it looks like she's about to get out of this building. David catches up with her and basically plays one of the
rudest
games of cat and mouse in this lodge. Sets it on fire with the intention of burning Ellie alive in this place and torturing her. And just when it looks at its bleakest that he's got her and is about to do some horrible things to her, she's able to flip the tables and take a machete and basically turn David's head into mush. Like, you don't see what she's done to his head, but you see her taking the machete to him, I think, like, at least 8 times before Joel is able to make it to
her. I mean, you're not even talking about the proper build of the scene. Because
I don't need to go there because I already went through it emotionally by myself once
I'll do it. So, for those who haven't or want a refresher, when you get into this, it's pretty much a family restaurant, which makes it even creepier that all this is happening. And there's glass and things that make sound on the floor. And you have to pretty much stealth to get behind David to stab him. Because that's kind of what Ellie does. She's like the shank goddess. And
she's goddess of the shank.
And every time you get him, he becomes even more aggressive in terms of how he stalks you. And when he finds you, it's a pretty messed up thing if you can't get away and restock him down. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, when I first came across it in mind, like the minute I got Ellie into the restaurant before the cutscene even happened, I'm like, this totally looks like a boss battle area. It's probably going to be David and like some dudes. Like, I was totally ready for like the standard takedown.
I recall, I was with you when that happened.
I was like, no, don't touch me. And it was the creepiest thing. So Naughty Dog totally knew how to make you feel creeped out and generally fearful of your purity.
It's one of the places in the game where I had a large emotional reaction and really wanted Ellie to get out of it. And it was very interesting to watch that, you know, all these different kids that they had playing, because they had, you know, kids who definitely played games, some that, you know, were very into shooters, so you would expect to not necessarily be very into the very emotional and really mature story that Last of Us portrays, because it really does kind of tread on the, can you live in the gray? Is it right. Okay? Is it okay to choose your own personal happiness over the good of everyone else? Because ultimately that's what Joel does in the game. And it was very interesting to watch their reactions to the David scene, because all of the girls playing the game were extremely emotional about it. And
oh, I bet.
When Ellie started taking it to David, were very much gratified which was the same reaction that I had. I was like, fuck him up. He deserves it. And then when Joel comes in and grabs her and is very reassuring, you know, they're like, oh, thank God. Joel got there. It was so cool to watch these kids have and develop the connection between Joel and Ellie. And when you got to the point in the game where you're just about to make it to the Fireflies, so you're getting towards end game of delivering Ellie and hopefully coming up with a cure for this disease that's taken over the world, in essence, there's a moment where Ellie, who can't swim, gets stuck in water and Joel is trying to get to her, but surfaces and she's not breathing, is performing CPR. And there are fireflies that come up on them and are holding a gun and tell him just to put his hands up and to let her go. And he's just dramatically trying to get her to breathe and is just saying over and over again, she's not breathing, I need to help her breathe. And one of the guys, before you see Ellie actually come to or not, knocks Joel out. Ooh. Everyone playing the game had this reaction to, like, are you kidding me? Joel has been through so much, and to finally get back to Ellie, to get back to his daughter, like, there were players both.
I mean, guys, he kind of fell on, what was that?
When he got impaled by the rebar.
Yeah.
They all were like, Jesus Christ, there's no way he's surviving that. And then he does, and they're like, oh, badass.
Man.
They all seemed to enjoy the part where they got to play as Ellie, which was interesting. But it was so cool to see at the point where, if the story's delivered right and the mechanism's delivered right, everybody has an emotional connection. It was very interesting to see these kids who are much younger than you and I get to the same connection. You know, because sometimes things hit people differently.
Different way, yeah.
And there is a lot, I think, of perception. I don't want to say stereotype, but perception that the younger generations are more jaded than our generation or even our predecessors. And to see that they all approached it from a real connected way as opposed to, well, this shit's not going to be fun because, oh, it's just a mission, it's just a game. They all made an emotional connection at the point where Joel wakes up and he's trying to get to Ellie because he's realized that in order for them to get their cure,
they
got to kill her. Every person playing that game was like, Joel, don't give up. You have to go get Ellie. And they're like asking, like, is he going to get Ellie? And there was this one dude, as the video starts, where Joel's basically being escorted out of the building and he eyes his backpack. At the moment the backpack thing showed up, he's like, all right, I'm about to go get my daughter. And the FMV starts and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, the story really does stand up well. The gameplay stands up well. They've all gotten to that place that Naughty Dog was really delivering
aiming,
us.
I think was aiming for everyone to have a very similar experience.
And
a very
it was just so cool to see
reaction.
This completely different generation have that reaction. And so I got to go through the game again through them.
Now I want to watch it.
Yeah, all 20 episodes are on the React channel. You can go to the React channel and go to gaming, and all 20 episodes of The Last of Us that the teens play through is there. And it's very interesting to watch their reactions getting through the whole game. There were two girls who were in the group who weren't gamers to begin with, and so this was actually the first game that they played and completed.
Oh, wow.
And one girl, like, she's crying at the end of it, and she's just like, I'm really glad that this was, like, my first game experience, you know, that I completed, because this was really different than what I thought things were gonna be, and this was such a really good story, and, you know, I think I would have done the same thing if I was Joel, you know, because he'd been through so much. He deserves some happiness. Like, they got there. They all got there. And they didn't all play at the same time in the same room. So they all were playing by themselves individually. So it was just really interesting to see that process. I really enjoyed it. So if you're a fan of Last of Us and, you know, you haven't played the Definitive Edition in a while and you want to experience Last of Us again, but through some other people's skin and experience, I highly recommend checking it out. I've really enjoyed it.
I'm gonna do it.
I suggest that you do. You will fucking love it.
Oh my God. Like, I'm already planning to pop some popcorn, pop open a beer, and get it
on. Pop open a what?
A beer.
A what?
A beer.
Oh, you mean a beer.
A beer.
Right. Beer.
Beer.
Got it. Beer.
Beer.
You're going to have beer.
Beer.
I will have tequila. But I've already watched the 20 episodes, and it was really funny because when I got to 17, my husband was like, are you still watching that? He's like, you know how the game ends. I was like, I know, but I don't know their journey to how the game ends.
Like, I know what mine was like, but
I know what my emotional ride was like, but I don't like this. You get
to put on another, you know, not to get all, like, Silence of the Lambs on you or Ed Gein on you, but I think people really enjoy, one, these React videos and even Let's Plays because, one, even if it's something you've played, like, I mean, I watch all of Markiplier stuff and I've played some of the games that he's played.
Yeah, but watching somebody else's experience.
But you get to put on, like, a suit for a while and experience it all over again, and maybe even experience things that you didn't the first time.
Yeah, or experience them in a different way because something resonates with somebody that didn't resonate with you, and so it's a whole different experience. It was really, really cool. Speaking of emotional experiences, another thing was announced this week that I will not... Well, I shouldn't say will not. Part of it I probably will touch, the other part I won't. Sony announced that they will have updated 1080p versions of Beyond Two Souls and Heavy Rain for the PlayStation 4.
I'm going to have to get them.
I
play them all over again and do Let's Plays and put them on Twitch like I did with Until Dawn.
I will not be playing Heavy Rain again.
You can watch me play it.
I will watch you play it. Heavy Wayne is probably the only
Heavy
game.
Wayne?
Heavy Wayne. Yeah, Heavy Wayne. Look, you said Bia, I said Heavy Wayne.
Heavy Wayne Bia?
All right, I ate gummy bears earlier, and some of my shit is still sticky, okay? Anyway, so Heavy Rain is a game that I have a moratorium on completing again. I emotionally don't...
Just can't handle it.
No, I can't. It really messed with me. Heavy Rain really messed with me.
I know it did.
It's really well done, and I've said that every time I've talked about it. It is a gorgeous game. It is really a clever and thoughtful game. But I think because of where I am in my life playing it, it hits way too close to home on a bunch of things. It really did affect me.
Like, I think for me, I think the one thing that I kind of regret about my playthrough with Heavy Rain is, one, I played the whole base game.
You mean your playthroughs.
Yes, because I just said I got every ending.
Yes,
I got every achievement. I platinumed that shit. But then I think a couple months after I beat it, the DLC came out.
Yeah.
Where you played as the, I can't remember what her, Madison.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get it because I did feel like every section that you were with her until the very end and you kind of established what her role is and everything, that they really didn't give you much for her. Oh, she's this girl that all these things are just happen to be happening.
Yeah, I accidentally killed her in the dentist's place, so I didn't really get...
Oh, well. Well, if she does, if you manage to get her out and she doesn't die...
It's because of my stupid six-axis controller.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
No, it really was. Like, because you gotta remember, I had the original Fatty with the original six-axis controller, and I didn't buy any additional controllers for my PlayStation. The controller that you had did not have the gyro, so I didn't have the option of turning off the motion control so that I could just use the directional pads to move that bitch out of there. And so the six-axis controller was not very accurate, the original one. Like, it made Heavy Sword almost impossible to finish. And it wasn't until they updated so that you could turn the motion thing off that right. I was actually able to complete it. So I'm sitting there and I'm fucking flicking the shit out of my six-axis controller to get her off of the table.
Oh, right.
And
because you only have so much time to get that done.
It never triggered. And so she died. So it wasn't even my lack of, like, paying attention. I was sitting there flicking the shit almost to the point where I threw my six axis over my head trying to get her off the table. And it just didn't register. So that's the only time where I've been like, no, seriously, that death was not on me and my skill set. And unfortunately, it was a pivotal story plot.
Yep, so in my game, there's no redoing.
There's no redoing. And so in my game, there was no sex because she died.
Well, no, the sex would have happened before that encounter. Yes, it does.
Nope, it depends on how you go through. It does not. because you can opt in the game to do one story versus another at a point. And so it's after that that the sex actually happens, that they meet up. Because
I must have stayed as the dad a little bit longer than
I did. And so because my
sexy time came before that. And then the next time I was her naturally in the game was when she encountered the taxidermist guy.
Yep.
Who, I mean, and the story about Madison is, one, we know that she's like a reporter and like undercover and stuff like that. But the thing is, she's had several run-ins with serial type killers. And the last one, she wrote a book about it. When you encounter this guy, and honestly, walking up to that house, you get heebie-jeebies just approaching the space.
Yeah.
Because you clearly know something's up. And, like, I got her out, and it was funny because I got it. Eshmom was watching me play it, and sadly, she got to watch me go through the...
Sexy time?
No, I was trying to get the golden achievement for The Perfect Crime, which... That's when you tie up all the loose ends, you know. And I felt bad because she's watching me let all these horrible things happen to the characters, and she's like, "Why didn't you save her?" I'm like, "Sorry, mom, gotta tie it up." But I was like, "But look, mom, in this save, this is what happened instead." So like, I showed her the good stuff, and I'm like, "But I'm working on the bad stuff right now." And she's like, "Well, I wish you were working on the." I'm like, "I know, it's a very dark tale right now, but." I gotta finish what I started, man. Like, and you get so invested. Like, they make it so...
And that's the thing. Now, I will be picking up Beyond.
I need to finish that.
Yeah, you do.
Well, now I can just start all over.
No, just finish it. Because we never talked about the end, because you didn't end it.
Right.
And so that's just been waiting for us to have this deep existential conversation... In podcasts, but we can't because you won't commit to either walking into the light or not.
I know. Just pick. I'm really right at that point where I just
have to pick. And you can go back and pick the other one if you put
like I committed to the Indian guy, like the reservation guy, like I'm ready to go back to the desert.
Then pick and go back to life.
But I could.
Or walk into the light. Just pick one.
It's so hard.
No, it's not.
It is.
You make a choice. That's so difficult. That's all you have to do. That's literally all you have to do. If you've completed the walkthrough past Willem Dafoe, then all you have to do is make the choice.
No, and I haven't done it yet. I am right at that point. I just...
Just make the choice already.
I can't do it.
Because I chose to walk into the light.
Okay, good.
And what happens when you do that is one thing. And if you choose not to do it, another thing happens. And we can't talk about those things because I refuse to ruin it for you. Okay? There are a lot of things I will spoil the fuck out of. But that I will not, because we need to conversate about it.
Well, look, for one, it's already kind of been spoiled because I know that if you choose to go into the light, you then become that energy, that entity for that little girl who could see you. If you save her. Because you have to save her in order for that to happen.
Yes.
But if you don't go into the light, then you and that girl become warriors in the coming apocalypse or whatever you want to call it, the dystopia of the world. So I know that that happens.
Well, shit.
So, spoiler.
That's...
Spoilers averted.
Spoilers not averted. Damn it.
What? You knew that?
Yeah, I did. Because I did both endings. Because, you know, it's an option.
Right. Right. You're right, bro.
Damn. We could have had this conversation like years ago.
I know. Because I already knew.
You asshole. I'm sitting here trying like, don't talk about that. Don't bring that up. Okay, you're going to talk about Quantic, but don't talk about the ending because she hasn't done the ending yet, and that would be a douchey thing to do.
I appreciate you holding steadfast all these years.
Bro. Oh, douche nozzle. All right, so anyway, the last thing that I have before I turn over the mic to you is just a really cool announcement that I saw that made me happy in my pants area.
Oh.
Which was my pockets.
Oh, okay.
My pockets. But then made me sad because my pockets are like, no, you can't do it. Released onto Blu-ray is a collection, a... complete collected works of Hayao Miyazaki.
Complete?
Yep. So Laptua, Cagliostro, Nausicaa, The Wind Also Rises, Ponyo, all of them.
Ponyo.
Mononoke, Porco Rosso, all in there on Blu-ray, as well as a gorgeous art book for $200. Not fucking bad, especially because half of the movies in the collection I don't own. You know, I've seen Totoro, I don't own it. I've seen Kiki's Delivery Service, but I don't own it. I haven't seen Nausicaa, I haven't seen Laptua, I haven't seen Cagliostro, I have not seen Wind Also Rises.
Okay, well, can I interject and say a few words on some of those?
You may, in fact, interject and say a few words.
Okay, so, the Cagliostro, watch it. Laptua, if you're gonna watch it subbed. Do not watch it dubbed. It will ruin the whole experience for you. What's the other one that you haven't watched?
I have not watched Wind Also Rises.
I don't have that one, and I haven't seen that, so I can't.
And I have not watched Nausicaa.
Nausicaa is good, so watch that. So, of all of them, and I mean, I don't have
what
all of
what Miyazaki film is not good? So, are you about to say something that you think you're going to get haterade for?
Well, for one, I always... There's another...
Oh, here comes the setup. Yep, this is going to be good. Hold on. Let me get my popcorn.
There's a director... whose name I always get him mixed up with Hayao Miyazaki. I think his last name's Takahashi. I think. I don't know. So don't quote me on it. But they have very similar styles of movie.
Correct. Like, we're just talking about Miyazaki movies.
Right. But I don't know if Princess Mononoke was Ghibli or not. Because
Mononoke is.
Okay.
It's in the collection. It's okay. Miyazaki's.
Okay. So all right then. So then
I'm gonna say this. Oh,
okay.
Snap! Seriously, you're about to throw shade on Mononoke. I'm just sitting back.
People are gonna hate me for
I want to make sure that what you're about to say is based on the story and not the dub. Because I will admit, if you watch Mononoke with the sub versus the dub, it's much better. But go ahead, say what you were about to say. I'm just gonna put this popcorn in my mouth.
Of all the Ghibli movie that I own / have watched, I do not like Princess Mononoke. Not because of the dub, because you're right, the dub is terrible, and the sub is a lot better.
So much better.
And more digestible.
Yep.
However, something happened, because at the time that I watched it, when I was the president of my anime club on my campus, and we did like a whole like month of Ghibli, which was fine. But while we're watching Princess Mononoke, like of all the nights that we did our viewings, nobody watched it. Like everyone was like, oh, I already know. Like even though these are all movies that we all have owned and watched, it's not a movie that you can watch with friends. I think it's a movie that is like a solo movie. Like, it's something that you can watch and interpret for your, like, have your own personal connection to it. But the minute you add two or three other people into the mix, there's something else you'd rather be doing than watching Mononoke.
Wow.
And it hit me like a ton. And we're watching it subbed. And I'm trying to, like, get into it for the sake of my group, you know, camaraderie. And we've committed to doing this. And it just fell apart in my hands.
And do you think that had more to do with the group of people in the room and that environment versus the movie itself having an issue?
I think at the time that we were watching the movie, because
you might have been a little jaded.
Where we are college students, we think we are untouchable. We think we're immortal.
And you've seen it all and know it all. Uh-huh.
And we're just like, oh, look how pretentious it's being with the high spirit yak thing, and oh no, they cut off his head because humanity is so greedy, and we were all just so snobbish. Like, we're like, look at this pretentious bullshit, while we're all fake smoking cigarettes like the French. No disrespect to French people, but like, we have all this fake disgust for things that one.
So, is it that Mononoke's bad, or just when you watched it, you were a pretentious little shit?
I became a bad person, and I judged Mononoke really badly.
Because you were a pretentious college student.
Because I was, yes. So now every time, and now I associate that dark, pretentious.
So here's the challenge.
I'm not ready.
You haven't even heard the challenge yet.
You want me to watch it? No.
Wait.
No.
Listen.
No.
Hey! Listen!
No.
Hey! Look!
No.
Hey! Hey! Listen! Which, by the way, there's a video, I'm sure you can find it on YouTube, also on Facebook, of a guy dressed as Link at some convention. I think that it was Comic-Con. It might have been an anime con. And there was a girl who was Navi. Oh, and when she ran and saw Link, she followed this dude for like good 4 minutes and just kept going, "Hey, look out. Watch out.
Oh,
hey,
my God.
Listen. Link. Listen." And like at some point he's like, "Look, what Navi? What are you trying to tell me about?" And basically it was like every pole that they walked by, the carpet, just people sitting. And so finally he grabbed her and gave her like a nookie. And she like jumped back and was like, "Hey!" And I was like, "Oh God, I would do more than just give her a nookie." It's hysterical. But here is the challenge that I put out to you. Because I have the same feeling about some movies that I watched as a child that I'm like, "Oh my God, this was like the most amazing thing." And then I watched it again as an adult and I was like, "Oh,
what happened? You did not age well, movie."
Correct. Like, The Dark Crystal. I love The Dark Crystal.
The Skeksis.
Okay, the Skeksis are probably the creepiest fucking enemy ever to exist in children's entertainment.
You say that, but you've seen the Teletubbies, right?
I've seen the Teletubbies, but still, the Skeksis are the best scary villain to ever exist. I mean, they were designed to be villains and to be scary. And when you think about, you know, the 80s having live action evildoers that look like the fucking Skeksis, that should give you nightmares. Teletubbies. Right. Teletubbies will just mess with you emotionally, but Skeksis will scare the shit out of your child if your child is 6 or under. But, you know, the puppeteering was very, very weird. And I remember as a child being like, "That was the best movie ever. I want to be an elf thing or something. I don't know." And then I wanted to be a Fraggle, completely other podcast. But some things don't age well. Some things, when you experience them when you're in one phase of your life, are different when you experience them in another phase of your life. So right. I'm not saying this weekend watch Mononoke. I'm not saying next weekend watch Mononoke. But what I'm saying is, you live in Massachusetts.
I do.
There will come some time where you are snowed in and can't do fuck all. Except maybe have a toddy or two for the body. Okay. And what I would say to you is, in that moment that you start to make the toddy, commit to watching in a row until you fall asleep all of the Miyazaki movies that you have at your disposal.
Okay.
So that you're not going out of your way to watch Mononoke, because if you go in and be like, "All right, I gotta watch Mononoke," you're gonna come in with all your baggage, right? But if you line up a queue of all the Miyazaki movies, you got your toddy and your body.
It could fall into an order, and I'll be more.
And you just, exactly, and you'll experience it for what it is and what it's not, and then just see if it's different.
Okay.
And then you can come back to the podcast and be like, "All right, so I was chilling during my marathon in the snow days, and this is what happened." And it either remains a pretentious piece of shit to you, or not. And you can be like, "I did grow up. I am a big girl, because I had this experience with it." And it still might not be good for you. It still might be not a good Miyazaki movie for you, but at least you'll be experiencing it with a clear head and no preconceived baggage.
And not in a room with like 50 other people.
Exactly. That are coming in with their own pretentious bullshit.
Oh man, the pretentious it was like methane. It was gagging. It was so thick.
You know, because that happens. Like, there are certain things that you experience with a group of people and you're like, "Oh yeah, that was great." And it turns out that it was great not because of the thing, but because of the group of people you were with.
Right.
Or vice versa. Because of the group of people you were with, something was a completely shitty experience where when you did it by yourself, you're like, this wasn't that bad. Why was it that bad? And then you realize it was who you were with and what they brought to the table. Like the American Pie movies. Okay. When I watched them by myself, I enjoyed them much more and laughed at them much more, at least up to Wedding. I didn't watch anything after Wedding. But up to Wedding, like, I enjoyed them more for what they were by myself than when I was watching them with people, because most of the people I were like, well, that would never happen, and that's not really that funny, because nobody would do that. And just like, wow.
Shut up, dude. You're ruining it.
Right? Like, don't harsh the buzz. Just go along for the ride to see what the ride is. And then after, we could talk about this. Not while it's happening. You know, so there's definitely a culture environment experience that happens. Like when I'm out at E3 and a new trailer pops off and I'm in a room with thousands of people who love video games and we all start popping off about how great it is, like, you get euphoric and you're like, yeah, we're part of this thing and this thing is awesome, and ah, and then 3 months later you watch the same trailer and you're like, nah, you know. So there's definitely that kind of group mentality that plays into stuff. So all I'm saying is basically trick yourself into watching it when you have no one else around you and no other external factors hitting you, and the time to really be like in your quiet space and watch it, which is why a snow day where you're snowed in and all you can do is stay bundled up and watch some entertainment, that seems like a great way to come at it so that you don't come in with this baggage. Because like whenever I go back and watch something that I know that I have had a previous preconceived notion about it, I always walk into it with that same preconceived notion. Like after watching the Everything Wrong With videos from CinemaSins for movies, I can't watch those movies again the same way with the same enjoyment, because I remember all of the fucking things that these guys have found that were wrong with the movie, and I'm just now looking for those and be like, how did I miss that? And oh my god. Like, and so I don't enjoy them the same way. So I'm very particular about which Everything Wrong With that I watch on YouTube, because I only watch them for movies that I don't own that I don't think I would want to watch again, because it's going to ruin it for me and I won't ever be able to watch it again the same way. So just go with that. That's my wisdom for the day. The more you know. Boing. Don't sue me, NBC. So that's all I have for this podcast this week. What do you have?
I'm going to talk a little bit about Steam.
A little bit?
A little bit about Steam.
Okay, well, what little bit are you going to talk about?
So I just started a light novel, like an interactive visual novel. I don't know how long of a playthrough generally is, though it has like literally like 4 true ends and like 27 bad ends. So a lot of shit can go wrong.
I have never played anything that had 27 bad ends.
Like, I'm pretty excited for it. And,
What's it called?
It's called Sound of Drop, Fall into Poison.
That sounds like a fun pick-me-up type of game.
Well, here's the thing. So when you think of a visual novel that has a horror theme, what's the general background setting that you initially think?
That's a horror thing.
Yeah.
Usually always set on like a school or a village that's
gone wrong or
a village that's cut off from the rest of society, humanity, technology.
So areas that
remote village in the mountains.
Like a castle, like a secluded area.
Yeah, secluded area.
Is generally the focal. Like, it's always some place that is isolated.
Right. A private school, a camping trip, a village in the mountains, a castle on top of a mountain.
Right. Well, this one, and the reason why I said yes to paying $12 for it is because this visual light novel horror game happens in an aquarium.
Like, the New England Aquarium?
Well, the aquarium is called the Manton Aquarium.
Uh-huh.
But it's literally at an aquarium. And I was like, how are they going to make an aquarium scary?
You can make an aquarium scary.
We have the New England Aquarium here in the
Beach. Yeah, and if you turn the lights off and just drop somebody in the middle of the aquarium, that shit would be spooky as fuck.
It probably would be, but it's not. When you think of, you know, like I said, when you think of horror games and, you know.
Yeah, weird fucking fish just swimming up to the glass.
But I'm just saying.
At your face and not knowing what a fish is.
But I'm just saying, when you first think about these type of games, that setting is not the one you would
think. No, it's not the one that comes to mind. But when you say it, I'm like, yeah, no, you can make an aquarium scary as fuck.
So what this game does in terms of that setting is it gives you all the goodies that you get from a traditional, you know, Japanese horror light novel. So you have your main character. Her name's Mayumi. And she's kind of quiet. She's antisocial. But she has, like, one friend at the school. Just one. Her name's Himeno.
All you need is one friend.
Oh, yeah. She's got one. And she's bubbly and she's very outgoing. And one day, they are at school. Because, you know, this game always has to start off on, like, the highest possible note ever before all the shit goes south.
Yeah.
And, like, they're having lunch. And Himeno's like, hey, new friend that I like very much, maybe this weekend we should go to the Manton Aquarium. And the minute she says it, your character, like, has, like, an internal, like, panic attack, which is really great with the audio cues to make you, the player, feel anxious. And, like, you could clearly tell that the character that you're playing has a bad, she's got a bad feeling about this. But she doesn't explain why she got a bad feeling about it.
Look,
but anyway,
people don't have to explain why they got a bad feeling. You got a bad feeling about something, take yourself out of the situation.
Right.
Follow your gut.
Well, she gets roped into going to this particular aquarium because Himeno is so obsessed with the mysteries of the Manton Aquarium. And some of them are, like, kind of scary. And some of them are just, you know, situations that have happened that people say keep happening. But the one that she's most curious about is that there is a rumor, and I'm using air quotes, that if you see the deep sea fish exhibit on the night of a full moon, you'll disappear. And there have been disappearances at this aquarium. And they also make mention that if you die in the aquarium, the jellyfish tank always increases. But, like, all those, like, school mysteries and, like, horror stories that the schools will make up in those situations, they've just applied them to this aquarium. Okay. Now, I'm only about, I want to say, an hour in, and I've just encountered, like, my first batch of decisions that I think will influence either a good end or possibly a bad end. I paused right at it because most of the time you can clearly tell by the dialogue that the character is spewing what you may run into. Like, at the point that I'm at right now, I have a choice to go back and try to find my friend because we have now been separated, or I could continue on since I'm already in this place that I don't know and maybe I'll just come across her. And my initial thought was, well, I'm already here, I might as well continue. But I'm like, but you don't know what that could potentially lead to. However, to get to the point that I'm at right now, I had to go through this room where there were these dead fish bodies and a human head, too, as far as my...
You know.
So I could go back. And I don't know if my character could deal with that emotionally. And I don't think in the situation that a character would do that. So, like, it really is making me step back and think. I didn't say this before, but I'm going to say it now. So the reason why the protagonist, the character you pretty much see the whole story through, has an issue with this aquarium is that 5 years ago, she came with her family and she had a younger sister who disappeared. Now you think if you're here with your best friend and she wants to go to this aquarium and you got a bad experience from it, that the first thing you'd say is, no, bitch, my sister disappeared there. I ain't going back there.
Probably without the bitch, but yeah.
I'd be like, bitch, no. Because, okay, and this is going to make me sound...
I said probably without the bitch.
This is going to make me sound very insensitive. And I'm prefacing it now because I know it for a fact. When we look at these horror movies and we look at these genres, what do we see? We see very naive white people... And they make poor decisions.
Why do you say it all key and peele like I said?
I said,
white people.
Like, no, but I'm, because I'm not trying to be that stereotypical here,
but I'm saying
the genre always tends to paint them in this light. And I'm not saying that all, you know, real white people, non-actors are like that. But I had to sit there.
Oh, I'm enjoying this so much.
But I have to sit there and go, for one, if this was a scenario happening with, like, you or me, like, say, hey, we're not related and we're friends, and I know that my sister got abducted or, like, was murdered at this aquarium, and you were like, hey, Panda, we're friends and all. How about this Sunday we go to the aquarium? I'd be like, no.
And I'd be like, why?
And I'd be like, you know the stuff that happens at the aquarium? And then you'd be like, that's gossip. I'm like, no, it happened to my sister. I ain't going. End of game. True end. Realism. You don't, when something goes spooky, you don't run towards it. You run away from it.
I mean, I'm sorry.
I never understood running upstairs of a house.
Fight or flight.
You get the fuck out of Dodge. Okay?
But anyway. I mean, truth. You run away from the scary thing and then find out on the news later what it was and how it got dealt with.
Right. But anyway, like I said, I'm only about an hour and a half in. I've just hit my first choice, so I don't know if I'm going to choose correctly or not. But I know that we're going to encounter potentially other people, and I'm using air quotes there because I don't know if the people that I'm going to encounter are people or figments of people. Like, I'm going to unravel the mysteries and digest it. The animation is absolutely stunning. There, I've only caught one grammatical error so far in the
hour. So does it play like a RPG, or is it motion?
No,
or
no, it is completely like reading a book until you get to an area that you can walk through. And then I guess it's kind of RPG-like, where you can, like, move forward or, like, interact with things a little bit. But it's not heavily intensive on the click, like the point and click of a that type of game. Like, it kind of reminds me a little bit of if you took the animation style of Higurashi no Nokoro ni and then added the element of Scion, the Emily Reed trilogy thing. So the point and click aspect of that with the animation style of Higurashi no Nokoro ni with a beautiful soundtrack. And like I said, it's available for $12 on Steam. I don't think you can get it anywhere else, but you can get it for obviously a Mac, since we know that I live the Mac life.
Yeah, but you can also get it. Life.
But you can get it for the Microsoft. And like if visual novels are your thing and you want something that's gonna really kind of get to you and resonate and like make you feel scared, this has already done it. And I haven't even had a bad end yet. But I know that there's 27 of them that I gotta worry about.
Well, speaking of bad ends and things like that.
Oh, no!
Upon your recommendation, Panda, I watched Markiplier play Mad Father.
Oh, did you like it?
Here's the thing.
Did you get through all of it?
I got through all of it.
All right, I'm going to give you a clap for that. Because there were a couple of scenes even I had to go, ugh. That freaked me the fuck out.
Yeah, but anyway, I got through all of it because, again, Markiplier. Right. So that makes it
He does soften the blow a lot.
He does soften the blow a lot. But there were still even moments in there where I was like, and this really shouldn't be that scary because it was made with RPG Maker. And so, you know, it's mostly sprites. And I know it's sprites, but what was that? But I made it through.
Good.
And here's the thing, okay? I really liked the story as far as, you know, it kept me guessing up to a point.
Okay.
I'd figured out that the haunting spirit was the mom early on, obviously, but not necessarily why. And then the why and the resolution at the end. Wasn't until the second encounter with dolls as sentries that I realized, wow, there were a lot of dolls. And this guy had been, you know, working on a lot of kids. A lot of kids. And why would he need to be doing things? And I was like, because he's trying to make the ultimate perfect doll. And his daughter is
He was planning to sacrifice her to create it.
It was pretty much the doll, and that's why she was the most precious. So I caught on to that early on. I'm like, and that's why it's called Mad Father, because
he literally went mad.
Yeah. So, you know, all the things, the Vader, the connection, all came through.
So I don't know, did you see, I can't remember if Markiplier showed both endings to that game.
So he showed the ending where you get away from Father, but basically end up becoming him.
Yes. Yep.
So if there's another ending, I'm not aware of it. That's the ending that he went through.
There is one where, because I think you have the choice, the lady he was getting buck wild and crazy with the big eyes.
Yep.
Because at one point you can...
Maria.
You could spare her, or you could, like, kill her, or, like, seriously hurt her. And in one of somebody else's playthrough, I think, they spared her, and you get away from Father, and then you meet up with her, and then she kills you.
Oh.
Which is kind of weird, since she... But Mad Father was really good. Witch's House is also really good.
I tried to watch that. I failed.
Okay. Also, there's another one that I've been watching another review player, the anime man, play called Blank Dream.
Okay.
Which isn't nearly as, it's not nearly as gruesome as Witch's House is, but has a very good.
Witch's House is fucked up. Like, I made it through Misao and Mad Father, so I'm like, all right, I'm going to complete this trilogy. The Witch's House can't be that scary.
Well, for one, Markiplier played that one straight, too. Like in Mad Father, like, he gave people silly voices, and, I mean, in Misao, he did the exact same thing. I mean, he named the girl Samanthara.
Yep.
Samanthara, come on.
Samanthara.
Like, you can't be like, oh, no, Samanthara. You can't. But in Blank Dream, which, like I said, I haven't seen all the endings to that yet, but it looks really good, and it has a really, really good story. I'd say the story's on the same level as Mad Father, but is not the same story as Mad Father.
Well, that's good, because we really don't need a lot more of that.
No, we don't. You're absolutely right. But this one I'm playing right now is very, very pretty. I want to get back into Umineko, like, really bad. But I'm just so damn lazy. I'm just like, figuring out the truth and doing lawyer stuff with magical powers, and there's witches, and it's on the Roppongi Island. I can't muster up what I need to play it. But Sound of Drop, Fall into Poison is really got my interest. From other reviews that I've seen, because I looked to see what other people were saying about it, they do find that it's incredibly short.
Well, if you've got 27 bad ends, you want the game to be short so you can go through them.
Well, I mean, I imagine that the people who reviewed them and said that are people who want to play these games a lot and knew how to properly trigger or could visualize the proper pathways to get certain endings. Or the game is just short. But either way, I've enjoyed it immensely. I'm going to continue playing it. And we know me with my completionist attitude. I'm getting all of them. Getting all the endings. Yeah, true or bad. And I'll probably not sleep for a week after I do it. But I'm going to do it.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. So if you like what you heard, make sure that you check us out on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com. You can get our podcast there as well as in iTunes, either on your desktop through the iTunes application or on your iOS device through the podcast application. Just search for the Eshcast and subscribe. You can also find us on Google Play. You can find us, you know, for the Android lovers out there. You can also find us on Stitcher Radio. You can find our podcast over at thevognetwork.com. Pretty much, if it's on, you've got a connection to the internet, you'll find us. So do that. Subscribe. Make sure that you get our podcast the moment we put them out upon the web for your listening pleasures. Also, check out our website for other reviews and previews and things like that we have going on there. I've got a couple of pieces up. Most recently, just talked about Cassandra Cain and my comic love and some stuff like that. So,
comic love.
I like to read and collect the freaking books. Comic love. but all kinds of other stuff from the entire team. Hamsterman, KBD, Byrick, everybody's writing stuff on the website, so make sure that you're checking it out, sharing it on the web. We've got our holiday guide getting ready to drop this Black Friday, you know, so be ready for that. We'll have a link up on our homepage, so if you're looking for a guide to help you figure out what to get the gamer in your life, we've got you covered. And we'll continue to be adding to the guide all the way up until Christmas Eve. You know, for you last-minute shoppers. We've got a little bit of everything, so make sure that you check that out. Also, check out all the great content that the entire network puts together. B3Crew.com, IssuesProgram.com, SmashedRook.com, StructureNetwork.com. Make sure that you check out all of our sites, all of our shows. We really love putting things together for you guys. So read, share, comment, be part of the community. Share your voice with us. Follow us on Twitter at ESH News. Hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Land of Esh. We have all kinds of great content that we're sharing there as well. Some of the stuff that doesn't even make it to the website. So make sure that you engage with us. If there's something you want us to share a review about or an opinion on, hit us up on our social, either on our Facebook page or Twitter, and tell us about it. You can even DM it to us if you're ashamed to say it out in public. But don't be ashamed. Let your freak flag fly. We do it all the time. So
yes, we do.
With that, I believe I've gone all the way around the horn. It's time for me to say, "Ayo, sis,
yes.
What shit you digging this week?"
My life. But that should have been Avi. What about you, sis?
I'm just going to share thankfulness that I have for people, you know, because it's the time of year where you really should be thinking about the things that you're thankful for. And I'm thankful for this community, for everyone who loves our podcast and shares it and all of our stuff with their friends and digs what we do. I'm digging you guys.
Aww. All you guys. We love you guys. Oh, guys. I love you so much.
So with that, I'm Ninja Sista.
And I'm Pandalicious.
Until next time.
Love and peace and chicken grease.
Love and peace and chicken grease. You have got the funnies. You know? You have the thing that they think cause the funnies. It's so the funnies. That's what you got. You got the funnies.